The Jeff Weiler Columbus Auto Mall is turning up the heat this summer. Buy now with no down payment and no payments for 120 days.
That means no payments until fall. No payments until fall.
With over 8,000 cars, trucks, and SUVs available, there's something for every budget and lifestyle. Pick your ride, get approved, and drive home today with nothing due until autumn.
But hurry, these offers won't last forever.
Visit Jeff Weiler Columbus Auto Mall and take advantage while selection is strong. The Jeff Weiler Columbus Auto Mall is turning up the heat this summer. Buy now with no down payment and no payments for 120 days.
That means no payments until fall. No payments until fall.
With over 8,000 cars, trucks, and SUVs available, there's something for every budget and lifestyle. Pick your ride, get approved, and drive home today with nothing due until autumn.
But hurry, these offers won't last forever.
Visit Jeff Weiler Columbus Auto Mall and take advantage while selection is strong.
One of the largest Star Wars fan collections in the world is coming to Cosi. Unofficial Galaxies opens on May 10th, and this is a one-of-a-kind exhibition with iconic characters, props, legendary ships, costumes, and behind-the-scenes secrets. It's going to be a must-see whether you're a hardcore Star Wars fan or just curious about one of the most famous sci-fi franchises of all time. Unofficial Galaxies is coming to Cosi starting on May 10th, so get your tickets now at Cosi.
It's all about the macro productions.
What does the goddamn line say, Tony?
Please do not use gendered language.
Then what? I'll be arrested, put in airport jail.
Look, you're going completely sideways, man.
It's a big club, and you ain't in it.
How dare you?
Mr. Speaker, the President of the United States.
I'm Chris Hansen with Dave on NBC.
Jack Marius, Tack Theratrix.
Hi, I'm Spartacus.
Steve Jackson, Sacramento, he, him.
Steven Seagal.
Sex offender guy.
I'm Keith Morris.
This is Muammar Gaddafi.
I'm Rick James, bitch.
Sorting through the lies.
The hijacker's passport was found blocks from the World Trade Center crash site, if you can believe that.
We cannot track $2.3 trillion in transactions.
And uncovering the centuries-long plan for world domination.
Learning about Cuba, having some food.
Let's talk about Chinese people.
Have you ever been in a Turkish prison? Swangled in Fort Lauderdale.
I have sent six of my Libyan missiles to blow up the Sears hardware department.
Nothing could be more fun than jumping off a cliff to German bisexuals.
Oh, you English are so superior, aren't you?
Thank you, comrade.
And now, macroaggressions.
That's what assholes call it.
With your host.
Buddy, I don't know who you are, but you're about to get chlamydia.
Charlie Robinson.
Hey, Whitey, where's your hat?
You want to drop the blame on Charlie and say it's all Charlie's fault.
He was a retard.
I get some goddamn diuretic.
Welcome to Macro Aggressions. I am your host, Charlie Robinson. If you're watching us on Rockfin or Rumble, or you're listening wherever podcasts are served, thanks a million. We appreciate the support. We couldn't do it without you. If you want to connect with me, the website is macroaggressions.io. You can find information on everything that I've got cooking with the books and the podcasts and all that good stuff. And if you haven't rated the show yet, oh boy, I would appreciate it. If you think we do a good job over here, we would appreciate a five-star rating. Thank you to our sponsors. They make this show happen. Legal Shield has been in business for half a century in the United States and Canada. They'll get you access to an attorney in your area for $1 a day. Very reasonable price. You'll get an app on your phone that will allow you to do all kinds of things, like tell the app that you need to talk to a lawyer about creating your last will and testament, a medical directive, a financial power of attorney. It's just click. It's just a checklist on an app. Click, click, click. Yes, these are the things I want. Send. Then you get a message. An attorney will contact you. And the next 24 hours, you'll get a call from a local attorney. Hey, I got your, I'm your Legal Shield person. I saw you want to talk about these documents and get these finished. This is what I'm going to need from you. Let's set this up. I'll see you Friday. Boom, you're done. You know what I mean? This is how it works. It's very effective. I suggest you go to the website and read up about it because there's a lot to know. Go to don'tgetpushedaround.com. That's the site that is built specific for this show. If you're interested, just go take a look. They have ID Shield. They have a small business plan. If you're somebody that carries a gun and needs like documentation for that, they've got it. So go to the website, check it out, see what you think. Also, I must say, Christian Yordanov has been on this show as a guest. He's a friend. We've been out in Acapulco together, and he's a sponsor of the show in that if you are in need of somebody to help you on your health journey, Christian's your guy. He really is. And I must say that I've been working with him for over a year. When I turned 50, I wanted to do the baseline, see where I am. So I took the test that he sends you a test. They collect samples at home. You don't have to go to a doctor or anything like that. Mail it in. And then he can see through the organics acids test what your kind of metabolic state is. And then he can target things. You need this. You don't really need this. Let's get you some of these supplements and whatever. That's how it works. On a personal note, my mother has been feeling really bad for the last couple of months. Went to a doctor. Doctor said, well, we're going to order CT scans and all this stuff, right? And I said, you should probably talk to Christian as well, just to be on the safe side, you know, and give him a shot at it. So he sent her a test. She collected the samples, sent it in. And he said, I see exactly what's going on with her. She has a parasite, and then she has two other situations that are happening. Here are the 9 different supplements that you need to get for her. He doesn't sell them. He's not upselling me or anything like that. Here's the links to all of them. Get these and start her on this process immediately to try and fix this gut issue, right? So he can see under the hood in a way that your established doctors don't want to or can't or aren't even looking. So if you're somebody that is sick, in the bottom of the show notes, you'll find a link to Christian Yordanov's site. On my website, in the sponsors and partners page, you'll find a link to him. If you're sick, reach out to Christian. You could talk to him for free right off the bat and tell him what your situation is. Just start that process. I'll tell you, you won't regret it. There's nothing worse than feeling shitty. And if you feel bad, you'd give anything to feel better. And Christian can help. So take a look at his stuff. I trust him so much. I trust him with the life of my mother. And with my own life as well. So there you go. It's about as big of an endorsement as I can give a person. So now that we've got that out of the way, let's talk about the petrodollar. This has been an issue that we have been talking about for a while, written in books before. If you see the petrodollar go away, you know that we are right around the corner from a catastrophe. And what do you know? The petrodollar arrangement, the situation that was put in place in 1974, has now officially expired. Well, it ain't great. This is not a good idea. This is a really, as an American, I must say, it's a really bad idea. If you're somebody that is denominated in dollars, you work in dollars, you save in dollars, you pay in dollars, and you live in the United States or elsewhere, this is going to be a catastrophe, like a real big one. Here's the thing, is that I think that perhaps some people thought that this was going to be an instantaneous thing, like a reaction, like, oh, the petrodollar situation is going away. Tomorrow will be hyperinflation. No, it doesn't really work that way. It takes a while to snake itself through the system. But also, on top of that, it's gradual for a while. It's going to be gradual for a while. And but we're going to talk about this. We're going to talk a little bit about how it came into be and why it done left, and what Joe Biden's role in this whole thing is, and where we're going, and what this means for global ramifications of everything. Really, there are very few things in the world that you can point to and say this impacts everybody. But the U.S. dollar, because of the way it has been just, you know, imposed on the rest of the planet, the U.S. dollar, what happens with the U.S. dollar impacts everybody, even if you don't conduct business in U.S. dollars, because somebody you interact with does deal in U.S. dollars, or you're buying oil in the form of, you know, you're buying energy in the form of oil, and all of those oil barrels need to be paid for with U.S. dollars. So that impacts it. So pulling the U.S. dollar out of the energy market and pulling it out of global energy dominance is going to be quite a long process, and it's going to be painful. And I don't like the idea of the American empire. I think it's disgusting what we've done. And the lifeblood of the American empire has been the U.S. dollar. So if I'm being intellectually honest, I want it to go away. The petrodollar situation needs to go away. But as an American who is living on dollars, I fully recognize what that means for me, but I don't care. The petrodollar situation has been a huge club that the United States has employed to beat into submission any countries that got on the wrong side of it. We've used it with reckless abandon. We've treated it poorly. America's role in being the world's reserve currency comes with some stipulations, some agreements, some responsibility. And when you tell the world you're not going to use it as a weapon against them, you better honor that. And of course, nobody trusts the Americans. Why would you? They lie about everything. Well, I mean the government, of course, and let's just differentiate there. They lie about everything. They lie to other countries all the time. They lie about important things. They lie about unimportant things. They're pathological liars. They can't help themselves. The American empire will always lie. That's what they do. They don't know any different. So when you see something like the petrodollar coming apart, there's going to be a lot of people that are going to be applauding on the sidelines. And we're going to dig into this a little bit. I want to get into, what this means for us. And I'm going to end this episode by explaining to you what the title of the episode means, but I promise you it'll all make sense at the very end. So basically what the petrodollar is that it's really oil revenues denominated in U.S. dollars. That's essentially what it is. It's U.S. dollars. The petrodollar isn't a real thing. It's not a different dollar. It's the same. It's the U.S. dollar bill, but it's the role that it has in with regard to oil. Dollars are required. That's part of the plan. That's part of this whole agreement. The other part had to do with what these countries like Saudi Arabia were going to do with all this money in the form of U.S. dollars. So you have to go back to the early 70s to see how this arrangement came about and who was involved in it and who wanted to make it happen and who made it happen, right? So in the early 70s, you have the U.S. dollar coming off of the gold standard. And when Richard Nixon closed the gold window to thwart the speculators, which was horse shit, of course, because anything that the president says is a lie. So when he says that he did it to stop speculation, he was lying. He did it because the dollar was a catastrophe. And instead, what they did, and they also wanted to free themselves up from not being tethered to gold, because they really wanted to expand this money supply. And the way to, if you want to expand the money supply and the money is tied to gold, then you have to expand the gold supply. And they didn't want to do that. They just wanted to expand the money supply. So instead, what they did is they said, we're going to get off of gold and we're going to free float. We're going to just be backed by a promise. Really, in actuality, we're going to be not even really backed by anything. We're just going to be dominant. The dollar, you're not going to be able to convert it for gold anymore. But I'll tell you what you can do. You can convert it for oil. Would you like that? Will that work? Because if we move from tying it to the gold supply to the oil supply, well, that's a much bigger supply. And that comes out of the ground easier. And there's plenty of places that are producing it. And we can basically just pump
literally pump money out of the ground, right? So why don't we do that instead, right? But we've got to go to all these, you know, if we're going to do that, we got to get these countries on board to agree to that. Who's, you know, who's the second biggest producer in the world? I think Russia's the biggest producer, but like, you know, Saudi Arabia out there. Well, who knows the Saudis? Who's friends with the Saudis? Well, H.W. Bush is. Okay, well, let's bring him in. So the meeting is Kissinger, Rockefeller, Richard Nixon, and George H.W. Bush. And their idea is, what if we just made it so that the Saudis said, we're going to sell our oil that we pull out of the ground because it's our oil, but we're only going to sell it for U.S. dollars. How about that? Would that work? And Kissinger, Rockefeller, Nixon, and Bush said, that'll work. Well, sure, that's part of the equation. That sounds like a great idea. It's a forced gun to your head demand for the US dollar. You have to, right? So if you're India and you need to buy oil from Saudi Arabia, you can't use Indian rupees to buy oil from Saudi Arabia. Saudi Arabia has now said you have to use US dollars to buy this oil. That's the only thing we're selling it in exchange for. You take your fake Indian rupee currency and you get out of here with that nonsense. You come back when you have US dollars. So what they do is that the Indian government says, well, it looks like we're going to need to be buying a bunch of oil in the future. So we're going to need to convert some of these rupees into dollars and just stick them in our vault. And that's what they did. And by doing that, that creates a demand on the US dollar. Now, it's an artificial demand. It's a demand at the barrel of a gun, essentially, because of the policies of the Saudis, but it's demand nonetheless. So it's whether it's fake or, inauthentic demand, it doesn't matter. It's demand. And the dollars are now extremely popular because of that. And that was 50 years ago, right? So we've been doing that. And so Saudi Arabia started it in 74. In 1975, the other countries got on board. The other OPEC countries got on board with it. And so they agreed too. They said, all right, fine, we'll do the same thing. Now, like I said, this is part of it. I'm going to read you a quote. This is from Christopher Blanchard. It says, these OPEC countries were advised on how to invest their surpluses by Western investment bankers and subsequently signed contracts with the U.S. on military bases, large arms deals, military training and cooperation on governmental and economic levels. Their government's dependency on U.S. specialists remained unchanged to the present day. So what they said is this: you guys agree to sell all of your oil in only U.S. dollars. And what we, the U.S., will do is we'll help you manage that money, because you're going to have a pile of U.S. dollars and you're not going to know what to do with. But don't worry. We have a plan for that. And what it is you're going to buy U.S. treasuries with it. Okay. And we're going to pay you interest on that. Okay. All right. Well, they want us to do that. The Americans want the Saudis and the OPEC countries to buy treasuries. And so we'll do that. That's part of the deal, right? So it keeps this circular, this feedback loop going, where oil is priced in dollars. There's demand for dollars. Then the dollars get spent on all these in all these oil producing countries. They wind up in their bank sitting on all these dollars. They go, what are we going to do with these dollars? And then the U.S. says, send them to us. We'll sell you treasuries. You send those dollars right back to us and we'll send you treasuries that you can put in your vault and you can sit on that and we'll pay you interest. And of course, this is the beginning of the massive debts that we had. Not to say that the U.S. wasn't running a debt before that, but it got out of control in part because of the petrodollar. And so now you've got all these oil-backed nations sitting on not just U.S. dollars, but now U.S. debt as well. So they're like, God damn, all right, well, there's only so many treasury notes we can buy. I mean, we got to buy something else. And they said, yeah, we'll take your dollars. We in the U.S. will take those dollars right back. But this is what, you know, listen, you don't get to just go buy real estate here. We want you to buy certain things from us. We want you to buy lots of arms, a ton of guns and bombs and military bases. We want you to develop military bases. All you oil producing countries over there I mean, you guys are all taking dollars for your oil, but what happened if some rogue nation decided to invade you? You guys would be fucked. So what if you guys pay us to build military bases in your country with these US dollars, and then, you know, we'll just kind of be there to protect you in case things get weird, right? Nice flower shop you have there. It'd be a shame if something bad happened to it, like it burned down in the middle of the night, right? When should we expect to be starting construction on our US military base in the United Arab Emirates? Tomorrow or next week? So that's how it works. That's how it works. They convince them to use their oil revenues to buy U.S. treasuries, to finance military bases, to buy arms, to create Saudi Aramco, Arabian American Company, which is the one of the top six largest publicly traded companies in the world. Recently went public at like a $2 trillion IPO, or I think a $1 trillion IPO. I think it's up to $2 trillion. Whatever. It's worth a lot of money. It's a lot of oil in Saudi Arabia. And the United States wanted to get their hands on it. And the relationship that the Bush family had with the Saudi royal family was extremely important in this. Okay. So, by the way, if George H.W. Bush were alive today, this would have never happened. Okay. You can say what you want about the Biden administration, and you can say, you know, and God knows I've said a lot, but they are an extremely weak administration. Very weak. Nobody respects them. Nobody takes them seriously. George H.W. Bush, in my opinion, I've got him in the top 10 list of the worst human beings of the 20th century. When that guy told the Saudis what to do, they did it because they knew he was an unhinged psychopath who would bomb the shit out of their country if the first chance he got. So they don't feel that way with Biden. And so they're free to do things like tear up the petrodollar arrangement and just kind of decide, well, we'll sell it for whatever. But one of the interesting things that this Saudi money also bought that nobody really talks about, but I talk about it, but nobody else apparently wants to talk about it because it makes the Saudis look bad, is that they used a lot of that money to start ISIS. Okay, along with, you know, these, with, you know, the other, you know, a couple other countries from OPEC. They don't really talk about it too much. But when you need an on-demand pop-up boogeyman, ISIS is great for that, right? You can just sprinkle a bunch of money around and create this army, and then you can have ISIS in Iraq, or you can have ISIS in Syria, or you can have, you know, whatever franchise of ISIS you want to put wherever you need to put it, right? And the Saudis are behind that, and they finance that. They use petrodollar money to do that. So when the United States politicians are in front of podiums talking about, we need to go out there and get ISIS and destroy them, it's like, your partners in Saudi Arabia created ISIS along with Israel, and there's been a lot of funding going on through our so-called partners. Okay, so like this idea that America is going to put a stop to ISIS, it's like, bitch, you created ISIS. What are you talking about? This is insulting my intelligence by talking about this. There's a concept called petrodollar recycling. And this is what this process was. This is the second component of this. It's, so you've got the petrodollar, right? We're gonna exchange oil only for dollars, and we're gonna call that the petrodollar. Then there's the petrodollar recycling, and that is, what are we doing with all this money? You know, like the drug lords that have the room stacked with all this cash. It's like at some point the having too much money becomes a problem. I mean, it's a problem we'd all love to have, of course, but it's a real problem. It's a real problem if you're Pablo Escobar and you're stuffing cash into the wall and then drywalling over it, or, you know, the things that they were doing to try and hide money. Or, you know, you're the Saudis and you're like, we've got all this fucking US dollars. We don't know what to do with it. Well, US treasuries goes away. You know, I mean, you can, there's an endless market for that. You can always, you don't have to put money in your, under your mattress. When you're dealing with the US, you can always buy their treasuries, but do you want to? I mean, have you seen the pile of debt we've got? We are over $33 trillion in debt, adding on $1 trillion of deficit every single 100 days. I don't know that I would really be in a huge hurry to buy U.S. treasuries if I were somebody that had a bunch of money. I'd be more inclined to invest in ISIS than I would in U.S. treasuries. At least you know you're going to get some of your money's worth for it. But So this is part of what happens is that the petrodollar, you know, it's funny, they come out and they say, oh, Bitcoin is used by money launderers and terrorists and everything. The U.S. dollar is used by money launderers and terrorists. Let's just be honest about this. Once this money went into the Saudi banks, it ended up financing global terrorism and helping the, you know, it created the boogeyman that the United States needed to justify the $1 trillion a year that it spends on its military, right? They create the problem and then spend a bunch of money trying to fight the problem that they created. So this is, and look, honestly, at this point now, part of the reason why the petrodollar arrangement went away is something that is referred to as hostage capital. That's kind of what they did with the Russian liquidity that was in the banks that when they froze the Russian assets, the United States decided to steal this money from Russia and like $300 billion. It was not a small amount. They stole quite a bit of money from the Russians through the banking system. And I think countries see that and they go, ooh, I don't really want to deal with the US and I don't really want to deal with the SWIFT banking system. This is called hostage capital. This is the money that the government can freeze and take that's invested inside the United States. So part of the reason why the petrodollar kind of looked unappealing to a lot of these countries is the fact that if I spend these dollars on, you know, if I'm a country and I decide to sell my oil in exchange for US dollars, and then I go and spend a bunch of these US dollars in on things that the, you know, that come from the United States or maybe even are in the United States, and I get on the wrong side of the United States, they're going to keep my stuff. And I don't want to do that. I mean, they've proven the American empire is a lot of things. But one of the things they also are just petty thieves that will steal your stuff if you let them. And so there's a question about that. There's a concern about that. So for the past half a century, the United States, you know, has been partnered up with the Saudis, with the royal family. And the Saudis have been our partners on quite a few things. Not just the petrodollar and not just the longstanding Bandar Bush and, you know, that whole Bush family Saudi relationship that's really well known. But you also have to remember that Saudi Arabia, they were our partners on 9/11 as well. You know, I mean, the Americans and the Israelis and the Saudis were the driving force behind 9/11, behind pulling off 9/11. So you have to be very careful when you're trying to remove yourself from this relationship. If you think of it this way, it's like the United States, Israel, and Saudi Arabia committed a murder together, and they all know where the body is. And one of the co-conspirators is like, I don't want to be in this gang anymore, and starts to slowly step backwards away from the group. That's a huge problem for the group. Because they're looking at the Saudis going, you're not going to talk, are you? I mean, we're all guilty. If you talk, we're all in trouble. You want to leave this petrodollar arrangement? You're not going to talk about 9/11, right? Because if you were to talk about 9/11, boy, I mean, we'd really have to examine our relationship with the Saudis, right? If they started talking. So now they want to break up with us. Now they want to see other countries, you know, they want to try out different currencies. What is our response to this? Well, under a strong administration, the response would be, if you break the petrodollar arrangement, we will rain bombs on you. I'm not saying that's a good thing to say. I'm just saying that that's what a strong administration would say. Under the Biden administration, they've got so many other problems that they can't even pay attention to this. They should pay attention to this. This is far more important than deciding, you know, what pronouns you're going to use at the next State Department function. you should really be focused on the petrodollar arrangement. And we're going to get to some of the other components that are tied to it. But look, the Saudis are tired. It's been half a century. What did they get from this? Like, they've got the Americans who they don't trust, really. Let's be honest. The Saudis don't trust the Americans. Nobody trusts the Americans. They shouldn't trust the Americans. I'm not saying that it's a bad thing that they don't trust the Americans. They have learned over time and through experience that you have to be very careful with the American empire. They will turn on you. They are a rattlesnake, and they will turn on you in a second. And so the Saudis need to be extremely careful with how they end or unwind this relationship, because we've seen what's happened in the past when you pull away from the American empire. It gets ugly. But the Saudis have been in an arranged marriage for 50 years with us, okay? And we've grown apart, and they want to diversify. And I can't blame them. Who wouldn't? I wouldn't want to be tied to the U.S. First of all, if you're the Saudis, you're making calculations looking at the dollar going, well, it's backed by all this debt. And this debt is a time bomb, and this debt isn't going to do well. So yeah, we've sold all of our oil in exchange for treasuries, but are we going to be able to collect on these treasuries? I mean, we may be sitting on a bunch of worthless paper as well. So we've traded tangible oil for worthless U.S. paper. This is a problem for the Saudis, right? Do we want to continue this relationship? No, we'd probably like to do something different. Well, when can we get ourselves out of this party? Well, you wait till Biden shows up at the party. Then you slip out the back door, which is what the Saudis did. Here's a quote from Mark Jones. Oil is not a normal commodity. No other commodity has five U.S. Navy battle groups patrolling the sea lanes to secure it. That is true. Look, let's also talk about this. America brings its lunatic cousin, Israel, to the party, and Saudi Arabia hates that fucking guy. You know what I mean? Like, they just wish he wasn't there. Like, you're going to bring this dipshit to the party? Every time this guy shows up at the party, he starts fights. He starts acting like an asshole. He starts calling people names. He starts threatening people and says, oh yeah, well, if you have a problem with it, my big brother over there, the USA, will kick your ass. We don't want him here, right? So the Saudis are looking at this whole thing going, God, we could get away from Israel at the same time. This would be great. So we've got, and look, having a relationship, if you're Saudi Arabia and you have this very close relationship with the United States, and you know that the United States is a parasite nation, or is being controlled, I should say, by a parasite nation in Israel that is manipulating the United States, and you can't stand Israel, then you start asking, why do I have a friendship with America at all? Like, you know, you're starting to hang out more and more with this guy that I don't like. Nobody likes this guy. Israel. He's a problem for everybody's got a fucking problem with him because he's an asshole. I mean, it's not for nothing, right? So the world is looking at this situation, and the Saudis are going, listen, things are changing in the world. Like, we would have never done this in 2000, but 2024, ooh, we've got all kinds of new things going on. Did you know we have BRICS? Oh yeah. We're going to talk a little bit about that. In fact, well, shit, let's talk about it now, because what's gone on lately with the Israel Hamas Gaza situation is that, as most things geopolitically, it's never limited to that one region, right? It always kind of breaks out. And you have the Houthis in Yemen who have said, listen, we control the shipping lanes through the Red Sea and Bab el-Mandeb Strait, and if you send any Israeli ships through there, we'll put them in the bottom of the ocean. Because as long as you guys are screwing with our brothers in Gaza, your ships are targets, right? As long as you continue to do that, the Yemenis have said, we'll take your ships out, right? So again, if you're Saudi Arabia and you're like, holy shit, we share a fucking peninsula with Yemen, right? Like, these are our next door neighbors to the south. We need to keep relationships going with them. Like, our oil doesn't just go to America, it goes to everyone. And if these guys have a problem with us, the Saudis, and the Saudis do have a problem with Yemen, they're bombing the shit out of them for years and years and years, but lately they've eased up on them and have decided that what's in their best interest is to make sure that those shipping lanes are open, right? But it creates problems for, you know, Israel has created problems for shipping in that area, and therefore problems for America, right? So you have to be very careful about this. The way the Saudis are starting to make calculations, these choke points are important, extremely important, right? The shipping lanes, the Suez, as Mark Jones mentioned, talking about U.S. Navy battle groups that are keeping these shipping lanes open, they do that because it's oil. Well, the Belt and Road Initiative is part of this, and the BRICS situation is part of this as well. So before we get into that, I mentioned OPEC. It's an acronym. Of course, it's an acronym. Organization of Petroleum Exporting Countries. And this is a group that's been around for a while, 50 years or so. It is Algeria, Congo, Equatorial Guinea, Gabon, Iran, Iraq, Nigeria, Saudi Arabia, Libya, Kuwait, United Arab Emirates, Venezuela, Qatar, Indonesia, and Ecuador. Those are the groups that are members of OPEC. So these groups are extremely tied together. I mean, they're tight in a sense that they're running an oil cartel openly, right? This is what it is. It's and there is, you know, the invisible hand of marketplaces of Adam Smith is totally removed from this. They set prices. It is a rigged marketplace if ever there was one. And oil prices go up. Oil prices can be manipulated to go down. I mean, there's all sorts of fuckery that's baked into the way things are priced. And OPEC plays a huge role in that. Now, as we start to transition into the BRICS, Brazil, Russia, India, China, South Africa, they have the BRICS play. The BRICS, I think, is what has enabled the Saudis to break away from this, because it has been, they've been in a forced marriage with the Americans for half a century, and they never had any other options. And they were too scared to run. You know what I mean? Like when your abuser is in the shower and you can make a run for it out of the door, you still have to know where you're going, right? Or he'll catch you and kill you. So the way the Saudis play this is that they were sort of hostages in this whole thing. And they were making money. I'm not trying to say that they weren't like benefiting from this, but they certainly would have loved to renegotiate this deal at some point. But there really wasn't a good time to do it until now, until you have another option, and that's the BRICS countries. And you need a weak U.S. president, and that's Joe Biden. So the BRICS roll out a gold-backed currency. Now, this is not a traditional currency in the sense that you would, as a consumer, you would be spending this. It's an inter-country currency used just by the BRICS plus nations. That is backed by a percentage of it is backed by gold, and they use this to settle cross-border payments and transactions between these countries. Right? It's not down to the individual yet, not yet, but it could be. Maybe we'll see. But it represents a possible replacement for the dollar. Now, I don't know if it will be. The petrodollar has been around for a while, and I don't think this is going to be like a leaking balloon, right? It doesn't pop necessarily. It just fizzles. It slowly fizzles. It's going to be bad in the end. It's still going to end the same, but it's just going to take a while. So if the BRICS plus gold-backed currency is an actual potential substitute for the dollar, that's a problem. But it's never a problem as long as the petrodollar arrangement's still in place, because then, you know, you're just kind of, you know, you're never going to beat them. But what if the petrodollar arrangement was not in place? Now, would a gold-backed BRICS currency be more appealing? Well, now it's at least in the conversation, right? And when you talk about the five initial members of BRICS, you're talking about $28 trillion in GDP. That's 27% of the world's gross, I don't know, we'll call it gross world product, right? That these five countries account for a little over a quarter of it. That's before they added the other ones, right? So now, so Brazil, Russia, India, China, South Africa has now gone BRICS plus. And if you notice their thinking in terms of adding these countries to this consortium, it has to do with resources and shipping choke points. That's what they're interested in. So they added Iran. They added Egypt, Suez Canal. They added Ethiopia, Gulf of Aden, Bab el Mandeb, in that strait down there. They added the United Arab Emirates. Now we're talking about the Persian Gulf, and coming around the corner from the Strait of Hormuz. And you've almost got Saudi Arabia in. Saudi Arabia is close to joining the BRICS. They haven't officially done it yet. Argentina was scheduled to. They had agreed to. Javier Milei pulled them out of it because he's a Zionist. And so he pulled them out. So Argentina is no longer a part of this. But I'll tell you something that is driving this BRICS Plus push is their new development bank. And they've got a bank. It's like an IMF, but it's for the BRICS nations. And through this new development bank, that's where you're going to see the financing to not just add additional countries. And there's like two dozen other countries that are on the waiting list wanting to join BRICS that are in the application process. It doesn't happen overnight. It takes a while, but there's at least 20 countries that have started the process of throwing their hat in the ring for consideration into BRICS Plus. So, you know, a gold-backed, think of this, right? A gold-backed currency that's currently being used to settle inter-country transaction that winds up building out its own SWIFT banking system to go around the United States, which Russia and China have already done. It's just a matter of getting it to the point where the BRICS nations decide to use that instead of the SWIFT. The SWIFT banking system runs all the wires through New York City. Everything gets cleared through the U.S. That's why if you get on the wrong side of the U.S., they can throw you off the SWIFT banking system because everything routes through the states first before, even if you're sending something from like Belgium to Ghana, it goes through the U.S. first and then it gets there. So that's why you want to, that's why if you get it on the wrong side of the United States, a variety of things happen to you. One of them is that they can throw you off the SWIFT banking system, which they did to Russia during the sanctions. But Russia was smart enough. They knew that was a possibility in 2014. So they already started working with China on building a backup. Because that's what you do when you recognize that your enemy, the American Empire, is a drunken lunatic who's telegraphing their punches before they throw them. You can make plans accordingly, which is what the Russians did. So it makes you ask questions. Could a digital currency backed by gold work? I don't know. I mean, it's like a, what would that even look like as we move forward? Could Bitcoin have a role as a digital asset, or it's a representation of energy, right? It requires energy to make it. Would they ever accept Bitcoin for oil? Not today, they won't. But will they in 5 years? Will they in 2034 after 99% of all Bitcoin have been mined? Maybe. Maybe they can't take it because it's too volatile. Maybe they need something with less vol because they need the stability of it. Maybe Bitcoin isn't the right currency or the right product, commodity to back this buy, or however you want to define Bitcoin. But a gold-backed currency could work. And of course, they're testing that out right now. So we'll see. We've seen sovereign wealth funds adopt Bitcoin. We've seen sovereign states adopt it. Not many, but we've seen El Salvador make that move. So I wonder who could be after El Salvador, right? Argentina could. Nigeria, probably, in terms of accepting Bitcoin. Argentina is probably more likely because it's got Javier Milei. But Nigeria would be the more logical choice because they've already got a third of their residents transacting in it. So it's interesting. We're at a pivotal time where money's changing. The petrodollar is dead. We knew it was going to die. Berwick and I were screaming about it in 2020. We knew that the petrodollar was going away. It's going away. A gold-backed currency embraced by the BRICS nation is coming together. Bitcoin is coming together. There's a lot of options out there. I don't know where it's going to go. I don't know how this is going to play out from a currency standpoint, but I just know that for the first time in a long time, there are at least choices, right? That a country has the ability to maybe price their oil in exchange for something other than US dollars. And that opens them up to the possibility that that could be anything, right? Saudi Arabia has already said, we'll take Chinese yuan. We'll take that for our oil. Okay, well, you know, the last time countries started talking about oil in exchange for something else, like oil for food or oil for gold African dinars, like Gaddafi was talking about or Hussein was talking about in Iraq. You know what happened when they started floating that idea of selling gold in exchange for something else? They got democracy dropped on them, right? Saddam got found in some spider hole somewhere. And Gaddafi had a knife jabbed up his ass. So, you know, we came, we saw, he died. Ha, ha, ha. That's what Hillary Clinton said. That's the American Empire's response when you decide to try to sell oil in exchange for something other than US dollars. That's what it has always been. It isn't anymore. Things are changing. So it's an interesting time, right? So I don't know. I would say that if you're paying attention to this stuff now, you're at a point in history where we haven't lived for 50 years without the petrodollar. And what will life look like without that? It may look very different. We'll see. We'll see how everything plays out. But the Bank for International Settlements is also starting to go this route as well, right? So they're starting to offer up a new currency. They've got a universal ledger. We've talked about that, about how much that's going to be a catastrophe for people. The crypto rails of evil, I would describe them. Once you put all the information on that system, then the Bank of International Settlements is going to be in charge of all that. And whoever controls the universal ledger will control the planet. That person will have an insane, cartoonish amount of power. But that's coming. And again, this is all coming because the United States let its guard down and allowed this sort of conspiring behind our backs. Good. I don't blame the countries at all, by the way. I'm an American, but I'm not part of the American empire. I take no pleasure in our behavior around the globe. So I don't blame these countries for finally deciding that now's the time to do it. The BRICS plus countries will have a de facto OPEC of their own, with their own gold-backed currency, plus all the strategic global choke points under their control. You know who's going to run things? It's going to be the people that are part of BRICS, not the people that are part of NATO. NATO's getting their asses kicked in Ukraine. It's embarrassing, right? So this idea that, like, oh, NATO's going to come out here and show you what's what. No, you're not. No, you're not. The Belt and Road Initiative is getting built out right now. Did you know that? Did NATO figure that out? Have they had their heads up their ass? Or are they paying attention let's talk a little bit about this, because this plays a role in the petrodollar going away. 25% of Chinese money is financing the Belt and Road Initiative, but the 75% is coming from elsewhere. Everyone else is putting money into this, and it is getting built out. Now, the goal is 2050 for it. It'll probably take even longer than that, but it doesn't all have to be done for it to work. It's incremental, right? So from the sea, you know, there's a sea component to the Belt and Road Initiative, and then there's a land part. For the sea, you've got China, Vietnam, Malaysia, Indonesia, India, Sri Lanka, Kenya, Djibouti, Athens, or Greece, and Italy, right? And these ports in these countries, there are also ports, the Gwadar Pakistan port is deeply important. That port is run by the Chinese in Pakistan. And they have now built part of a rail line that will connect Pakistan to China, kind of north-south, through the Himalayas or around them. And that's going to be, that's a huge win. That's actually deemed like an economic corridor. So you wind up in getting these weird tax breaks and all kinds of things happen in these special taxing districts that are part of this Belt and Road Initiative. So if you're a country that plays ball and decides to be part of this, you're going to get these trade routes built out for you by the land and by sea. And on top of that, you're going to get some pretty impressive incentives as far as taxation reasons and some sort of, you know, waivers and things like that. So Pakistan is running, or China is running that port in Pakistan. We've got a port in Colombo, Sri Lanka. There's one in Kuala Lumpur, Malaysia. They're building a port in Jakarta, Indonesia, one in Hanoi, Vietnam, Guangzhou, China. There's several in China. There's like six of them in China. There's one in Venice, Italy, Athens, Greece, Nairobi, Kenya, Kolkata, India. So they're taking over these strategic seaports and building out the old Silk Road. It's what they're doing. It's what they said they were going to do, and that's what they're doing. Over land, it's a little different. It's still China, as you would imagine. But now we've got Russia involved, and Kazakhstan, and Uzbekistan, and Iran, and Turkey, and Ukraine, and in Germany, in Italy. And so it runs through all of these places. And so it's something that I think that people need to understand too, because in order to understand the petrodollar going away, it didn't just happen because there was an expiration of some treaty or some contract. I'm not even positive that there is a treaty or contract creating the petrodollar arrangement. I don't even know if it's so much an actual, like, signed document as it is just sort of a informal agreement, but it is what it is, and it's happening and has been happening, and now it's going away. And the reason why these countries are feeling emboldened enough to step up and say we're out of here is because of BRICS Plus and because of the Belt and Road Initiative, and because you're starting to see these countries work together, Russia and China, as opposed to working against one another. And the irony is that the reason why these two countries are working so closely together now is that the United States has pushed them together through their behavior, through what they've done to Russia and Ukraine and the way they've demonized China. And China and Russia are looking at each other like, you want to take this guy out back and kick the shit out of him? Because I'm tired of the American empire, you know? And you really can't blame them for thinking like this. Or hey, why don't we just go do our own stuff? Let's go build a railway together. Like, you want to trade with me? I want to trade with you. Hey, you over there, Saudi Arabia, are you tired of dealing with those lunatics in the USA? We'll buy oil from you. Hey, we got a bunch of people that would love to buy your oil, but we're not going to buy it in dollars. Will you sell it to us in something else? They're like, I don't know. What are you thinking? I don't know. I mean, gold-backed BRICS currency, Bitcoin, anything, chickens. We'll pay you in chickens. Fuck. Anything at this point is better than a dollar. You want to take a soon-to-be worthless Federal Reserve note from your sworn enemy in the United States and use that? Or do you want to move on to something else? And I think the world has decided to move on to something else. I mean, they have already invested $1 trillion into the Belt and Road Initiative as of 2023, because they know that there needs to be a counterbalance to the American empire. There has to be something to the petrodollar to offset it. Because if you don't have that, then America just does whatever it wants. And we've seen what that means. It means endless wars. It means enslaving countries. It means getting groups of people to do something that they don't want to do because they're terrified that America is going to bomb them. It creates divisions between groups that were cooperating with one another, but maybe one of them worked a little bit more with the U.S. And so the U.S. put pressure on them to end that relationship. Break up with your ex-boyfriend, delete his phone number out of your phone, you know, all that shit, all that crazy psychotic stalker behavior, ex-boyfriend current boyfriend behavior, that's the American empire. They're lunatics going through your phone asking, whose number is this? Whose number is this? You want me to go? I'm going to go over to this guy's house and beat him up, right? So the fact that Saudi Arabia finally had the option, the opportunity to make a break for it, man, I don't blame them. I really don't. I told you I would end by explaining what the name of this, of what this episode means. I will tell you a quick little story to wrap it up, and then we'll get out of here. When I was 13 years old, I was in Australia, and I was in the Townsville airport at like 5 o'clock in the morning with my family, which is like a northeastern Australia small town, yeah, reasonably sized town. And this is 1986, to put it in perspective. I have been on this trip with my family. It's a 3-week trip all through Australia and Fiji. I have two cassettes with me. I have a Walkman because I'm old, and this is 1986. I have two cassettes with me: Billy Joel's Greatest Hits and Dire Straits' Brothers in Arms. Just came out, right? Greatest album ever. We're in the airport. There's nobody in the airport except me, my family, and the entire band, Dire Straits. They're there on the Australian tour. And I'm too much of a chicken to go say anything to them. I've got two cassettes with me. One of them is theirs, and I won't say anything. I'm just too scared. Years go, so that's my Dire Straits story, right? Years go by. I love the band. Mark Knopfler is the greatest guitarist in the world. I'll fight you for charity, as Sam Tripoli says. Years go on. 2001, my buddy's the head of promotions at the Greek Theater in LA. You know that movie, Get Him to the Greek, with Russell Brand? The Greek Theater is a real place. My old roommate used to run promotions for it. Mark Knopfler comes through. And I said, dude, you got to hook me up, right? So he goes, you're on the list. He says, I'll put you on the list, you plus one, and then backstage. I was like, oh, this is going to be great. So I meet some girl the day before. It wasn't no romantic interest or anything like that, but just during the conversation with a group of people, I mentioned that I was going to see Mark Knopfler the following night. And this girl was like, oh my God, I love him. He's great. I said, well, I have an extra ticket. Would you want to go with me? She's like, fine. So she comes and we watch the concert, and I don't even really know her, but I don't give a shit. I just want to watch the concert. Afterwards, it ends, go backstage. And it's not even really backstage. It's like there's this little like villa that's kind of off to the side of the Greek. It's, you know, you can't get in there unless you have like the wristbands and everything. So I go back there and I see Mark Knopfler, and I go up to him and I said, I introduce myself. I say, listen, the last time I saw you was in Australia. I was too chicken to say anything. So I told my mom that if I came back and if I actually saw you backstage, I would go up and say hi to you, you know, and I'd ask you for a picture, you know? And he said, well, we can't let your mom down now, can we? I said, no, we can't. Absolutely not. So he took a picture with me, and he couldn't have been nicer. Right. And I had one of these out of body experiences that happened right after that. You ever been at at like a cocktail party or something where everyone's kind of standing around, and maybe they're standing in a group of four or five people and everyone's kind of standing looking at each other. They've got a drink, maybe hors d'oeuvres or whatever. I had that moment where, and you get these social cues during the course of a cocktail party where the conversation has wound up, you're sort of done, and now it's time to like, oh, finish my shrimp. I'm going to go refill my plate and go get another drink, and you wander off because that conversation has ended, right? I'm having this conversation with Mark Knopfler, which in my mind already is a bit of an out-of-body experience, and I'm trying to play it as cool as I can. While I'm talking to him, two other people come up, step up, and join the conversation. So now it's a four-person conversation. It is me, Mark Knopfler, Jackson Brown, and Bonnie Raitt. And I didn't get that social cue that was like, time for you to leave, buddy, who doesn't know any of these people. And I kind of just sort of stayed and stood there, not really saying much, listening to this conversation go on. And I am tripping out because I am such a huge fan of all of them, right? And you're talking about, hey, well, maybe we go down. Hey, Mark, you want to go to Malibu? Maybe come to the studio. We're working on some stuff. Oh, that'd be great. Yeah, I'll come to the studio. I'm like, oh my God, I can't believe this is actually happening, right? Then I wind up, you know, leaving this conversation, and About 5 minutes later, I hear this yelling on the other side of the room. And the girl that I'm with, who I would say is my date, but I wasn't dating her or anything like that. The girl that I'm with, I turn around and I see Bonnie Raitt goes, "Will you just give me some space and get out of my face?" You know, and I was like, "Oh shit." I like started laughing. I was like, "I don't know her." You know, I totally sold her out. I was like, never seen her before. Time to get out. You know, so I didn't go over there and bail this chick out who's getting screamed at for Bonnie Raitt. I don't know what she did, but she probably had it coming to her. But I say this entire, I give you this whole Mark Knopfler story as a way of saying this. First of all, you got to go. I have a song for you to listen to. It's by Mark Knopfler. It came out in 2004. It's called "Don't Crash the Ambulance." And I'm going to read the lyrics from it. I don't know for sure if this is about George H.W. Bush and George W. Bush and the Saudis in the oil business, but I think it is. I'm going to read this. And I would advise, I would say go, if you've ever seen the movie From Dusk Till Dawn, you know, there's that scene where Selma Hayek is in that sketchy bar dancing around, you know, the snake, and there's this band that's playing this like slow kind of Mexican music. That's what this song sounds like. It's a very Mark Knopfler song, but you can hear his guitar and know exactly that it's him. And I'm going to read you, we're going to end with this. I'm going to read you the lyrics, because I was listening to it when the petrodollar, I was listening to it and I was thinking, this feels right to me. I'll skip to about midway through the song, and I'm not going to sing it, by the way. I'll just read the lyrics. "What we have here's a dunghole place. Thought it was fly shit on the map. Fat bastard, ugly face. Oh, and the personal crap. You can't move the barriers. You can't mess with oil and gas. Had to go down there, stick a couple of aircraft carriers in his ass. Then it says, "Well, I think you're going to be okay, son. You've had the tour, I guess. These two buttons, by the way. This one, I hope you never press. Some holy fool, just watch, who's not like you or me. That one's the whole shooting match right there. It's the whole shittery. We don't forget who put us here, Jack. That's page one. We talk soft, carry a big stick, pack the biggest gun. We don't like accidents, major or minor. You don't want yourself an incident. Don't ever invade China. Here, son, I'm handing over to you. Don't crash the ambulance. Whatever you do." If you like this episode, you can take the additional step right now of sharing it with your friends and family. You can connect with me, macroaggressions.io. Rate the show if you think I've done a good job. Thanks, everybody. I'll talk to you again soon.
The Jeff Weiler Columbus Auto Mall is turning up the heat this summer. Buy now with no down payment and no payments for 120 days.
That means no payments until fall.
No payments until fall.
With over 8,000 cars, trucks, and SUVs available, there's something for every budget and lifestyle. Pick your ride, get approved, and drive home today with nothing due until autumn.
But hurry, these offers won't last forever.
Visit Jeff Weiler Columbus Auto Mall and take advantage while selection is strong.
One of the largest Star Wars fan collections in the world is coming to Kosai. Unofficial Galaxies opens on May 10th, and this is a one-of-a-kind exhibition with iconic characters, props, legendary ships, costumes, and behind-the-scenes secrets. It's going to be a must-see whether you're a hardcore Star Wars fan or just curious about one of the most famous sci-fi franchises of all time. Unofficial Galaxies is coming to Kosai starting on May 10th, so get your tickets now at Kosai.org.
The Jeff Weiler Columbus Auto Mall is turning up the heat this summer. Buy now with no down payment and no payments for 120 days.
That means no payments until fall. No payments until fall.
With over 8,000 cars, trucks, and SUVs available, there's something for every budget and lifestyle. Pick your ride, get approved, and drive home today with nothing due until autumn.
But hurry, these offers won't last forever.
Visit Jeff Weiler Columbus Auto Mall and take advantage while selection is strong.
One of the largest Star Wars fan collections in the world is coming to Cosi. Unofficial Galaxies opens on May 10th, and this is a one-of-a-kind exhibition with iconic characters, props, legendary ships, costumes, and behind-the-scenes secrets. It's going to be a must-see whether you're a hardcore Star Wars fan or just curious about one of the most famous sci-fi franchises of all time. Unofficial Galaxies is coming to Cosi starting on May 10th, so get your tickets now at Cosi.org.
You have 5 new messages.
Hey, Carl, it's Jen from Finance. Could you submit your expenses this week?
Hey, Carl, happy Friday. It's Jen, Finance. Just need those receipts today.
Me again, Carl. Really need those receipts, like last week. Please just tell me where they are. Are you by your desk right now?
Finance teams, you shouldn't be chasing down Carl or anyone else. With Ramp, expenses are sent with a text and reminders happen automatically. Switch your business to ramp.com today and love finance again.
The Jeff Weiler Columbus Auto Mall is turning up the heat this summer. Buy now with no down payment and no payments for 120 days.
That means no payments until fall. No payments until fall.
With over 8,000 cars, trucks, and SUVs available, there's something for every budget and lifestyle. Pick your ride, get approved, and drive home today with nothing due until autumn.
But hurry, these offers won't last forever.
Visit Jeff Weiler Columbus Auto Mall and take advantage while selection is strong.
One of the largest Star Wars fan collections in the world is coming to Cosi. Unofficial Galaxies opens on May 10th, and this is a one-of-a-kind exhibition with iconic characters, props, legendary ships, costumes, and behind-the-scenes secrets. It's going to be a must-see whether you're a hardcore Star Wars fan or just curious about one of the most famous sci-fi franchises of all time. Unofficial Galaxies is coming to Cosi starting on May 10th, so get your tickets now at Cosi.org.